This is CliffCentral.com.
Yeah, Monday morning. What's
what?
Oh. Oh, you like that?
Well.
What's not to like, right? Good morning, everybody. It's definitely the first day back for a lot of people. Wow. Suddenly the roads are back to being normal, crazy, there's sirens, people slamming on brakes, all the whack jobs are back at work.
We're all in this together.
Yep.
Like it or not.
Correct. It's just after 6 o'clock on Monday. It's the 15th of Jan. Time is marching steadily along. Before you blink... Yeah, before you blink, like a third of the year is over, then a half, and then just like that, we're back in December. Oh, you know how it happens. I'm not making it up.
Yeah.
It does feel like a world ago, though, if you think, like, Christmas. Mm. Feels like ages, right?
Mm-hmm. Don't ask me what I did for Christmas. Jeez, it's years ago now.
But it's less than a month. That's
a matter of weeks, even.
It's crazy. It's just, like, I'm trying to figure out in our heads how we get time to go faster or slower, because it definitely is a malleable concept in our minds. Mm-hmm. We certainly have a grasp on it as something that is static, something that is consistent, in theory. But ask someone about 2016, they're like, oh, that was so long ago. And then when you think about a favorite movie or a favorite song and you think back and you go, what? That's 20 years old?
Yeah.
It doesn't seem right. So it's definitely, there are two kinds of time. There's real time, like the actual clock ticking, and that makes a lot of sense. And then there's the idea of time in your head, which is totally different. Totally mixed up and messed up.
Yeah.
All right, well, there's lots to talk about today, and we've got to get into whether or not we live in a shithole, which I think we must do a little later on. I've got some great clips there as well. So that's coming up. Donald Trump. Apparently, it was a meeting with the Democrats to talk about immigration reform, and these Democrats could not wait to get out of the Oval Office and spread the news to the world that Donald Trump had called countries. He didn't say which countries, by the way. The Democrats filled that in themselves. They're like, Donald Trump is such a racist, such a bastard, and he said the following about these countries. He didn't say it about those countries. You decided what countries to populate the list with, which tells me something about you, frankly. Because, of course, Donald Trump would say something like, these countries are racist, or shitholes, rather. But he didn't choose the countries. You did. And if you chose the countries based on him saying the word shithole, tells me about what countries you think are shitholes, not which ones he thinks are shitholes. Either way, I mean, haven't we all come to accept that there are shithole countries in the world? If I dropped you off in Somalia, or in Syria, mm-hmm. or in North Korea, would you be having a hell of a time? I mean, would you be sunning yourself on a beach? Would you be enjoying yourself next to a... you know, clean pool where services worked.
Yeah, well, you'd be a lot more random with your travel, because if there's no shithole countries, then right. you'd just spin the wheel anyway. Let's just see anyway.
But in any case, all first worlders think third worlders are shitholes anyway. I mean, that's just common.
Because 99% of the time, they're absolutely right.
Well, there you go then. So then what's the problem? That's what they think.
I think, though...
That's what it is. It's not what they think. It's the truth. Haiti is a shithole. Haiti's been independent for 30 years less than the United States. That's all. 30 years difference.
Does that also mean not accept people from Haiti because of that?
No. No, absolutely not. That's got that's you throwing a whole lot more into this.
Is that some not
countries,
what you said?
Some countries... Not all countries are equal. When the president of Burkina Faso stands up at the UN and starts talking, most of the room is empty. I hate to say it, because... The goings-on in Burkina Faso, it's like when Mugabe used to speak at the UN, most people would just leave the room. They didn't stick around because what he had to say was of less import than what someone from Japan or Germany or America or Russia had to say. Mm-hmm. right? Just because those countries have a lot more weight in the world. They have a lot more clout. And usually the citizens of those countries are more educated. They have a country where they have basic services that work. I mean, there are also countries that work that nobody cares about. Nobody gives a shit when Australia says something. Do we?
No.
No. Or New Zealand. New Zealand pipe up as a supposedly first world country. When Norway speaks, does anyone go, got to listen up to those Norwegians? No, because not all countries are equal. And not all countries have net immigration. Many countries have net emigration. Look at the whole of North Africa at the moment. People are getting onto pontoons and inflatable tires. They're getting onto whatever they can and crossing this Mediterranean. They get stranded in the middle of the Mediterranean. They die of heat stroke or they get picked up by police because they're desperate. They'll go anywhere other than be in Algeria, Libya, Tunisia, Morocco, Chad, Central African Republic, Mauritania, Mali. I don't want to be there. Sudan, South Sudan.
Yeah, but you are splitting hairs far too much at this point. Let's not forget that first worlders look at us, the continent, as one big country anyway. So, like, really, the whole of Africa is a shithole to them.
They do think
all
so.
Of us.
Well, I don't know if they... I don't know.
I mean, I don't think that they get as detailed to worry about the difference between North, Central, Southern. Like, they just view us as one big...
I don't care what they think is the point. And especially, here's the funny thing. Is like, everyone who's so upset with Trump, these are the same people who keep telling me they don't care what Trump thinks or does. They're the ones who keep saying he's an idiot. So if you think he's an idiot, why are you listening to him? Like, if someone's a moron, if you think someone is an inconsequential moron, and what they say is backed up by all kinds of dumb ideas, and, you know, you think they're a racist, and you think they're uneducated, and they shouldn't be in the position they're in, then don't listen to them. But if you listen to them, and you take them seriously, that must mean that they're saying something that you think is true. Otherwise, why would you get upset? Because if a douchebag says something, like someone walks in here off the street, some homeless person comes in off the street, and they go, you know what, that Sia is such a piece of crap, and I hate Sia, and Sia shouldn't be working here, and he doesn't know anything. Am I going to listen to the homeless lunatic from down the road? No, I'm going to dismiss it because he's a homeless ranting lunatic from down the road.
But I think it's also hard to not listen to the lunatic in inverted commas when he has a very high platform.
Okay, so when our president speaks, you think anyone takes him seriously?
And yeah, he's we're South Africans. We know it's just shut this up. Is,
right, so he's a president. He's the president of South Africa.
Yeah.
And he talks a whole lot of shit too. We don't take him that seriously. So why are we so worried about... Everybody's upset about Trump. I mean, you had Anderson Cooper basically crying on television. Anderson Cooper's crying because he's up in Haiti. The people of Haiti are great. Donald Trump didn't say that Haitian people who come to America are all assholes. He said their country's a shithole, which is true. Otherwise, why would they want to come to America? I always say, you know, look at what people are doing. If you are a person of means, you've got a dream, a brain, a skill, you've got something you want to use to improve your own life, and you get onto a boat and you go to the United States. That's because the United States represents hope for you. Those people are hardworking and they get to the United States and they do exactly that. They work hard. And Donald Trump saying that the country they've come from, they probably agree with him it's a shithole. That's why they're not there anymore. So what exactly are we arguing? Are we arguing that a president shouldn't say this? Are we arguing that there aren't shithole countries? Those are demonstrably not true. Joe Biden's the one who went up in front of a bunch of black people during the election pre the Donald Trump election and said to a whole lot of black people in America, Mitt Romney going to put you all in chains. You remember that? That's not very presidential for a vice president to say that. He's the one who came up on Twitter yesterday saying this is not very presidential. Not very presidential.
You telling me Obama's wingman said he's going to put black people in chains?
No, yes, he said Mitt Romney's
but Obama's wingman was a likable person. You see, this is what you forget.
Right. No, he is.
If we like you, we'll excuse you. If we don't like you, we're going to use every ammo we can against
complete
you.
Crap subjected. Like,
court of public opinion.
I just think a lot of people don't want a president saying things that we say to each other. because for some reason they're meant to be these pedestal sitting oracles slash, I don't know.
They're better than you.
Yeah.
Which they're not. And I mean, Donald Trump's not better than a lot of us.
Donald's reminding us how politicians aren't better than us. And I like him for that.
No, we need constant reminders of that.
And we need to know that there are places in the world that are shitholes. You know it. You wouldn't go to them. If I gave you a free ticket to Iraq, you're not going to necessarily grab it with both hands, yeah. Are you?
No. Do you want to go to the Democratic Republic of Congo right now?
Probably not.
I'm going to go no.
I don't know. Look, I'm a bit weird. I'd go to Iraq and the DRC, but then I know that that's not true for everybody, and I certainly wouldn't do it for a holiday. I'd go because I'm interested in Iraq, in the history, and in the DRC, in the fact that this is a country that's got this enormous, enormous mineral and natural resource going for it. The people there are laboring under this post Mobutu Sese Seko Kabila family crime business.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd be interested in the politics, and I'd be interested to see how it looks.
Well, if you talk to anybody who's gone there, you don't get to know what the politics are. You just get to know what bribes are. Bribes and machine guns. No,
well, there we go. Because it's a shithole, right?
Yeah.
Right.
They'll come to your hotel, they'll take your passport, and then they'll say, we need $10,000.
Right.
They won't do it aggressively. They'll do it as a point of business.
Yeah.
I've had people that gone there. It's not nice.
That's not going to happen to you in Luxembourg.
The Seychelles.
No.
Well, I was watching The Daily Show, and Trevor was commenting on all of this, especially how, you know, Trump says, yeah, we'd far rather accept people from Norway. And Trevor was like, people from Norway probably are like, nah, we don't want to come to your shithole country.
Apparently,
we have free healthcare, free education. We're fine in Norway.
Is he calling a shithole country? America's made Trevor Noah.
Well, he says, no, people in Norway are probably looking down like that. Like, nah.
I heard that a lot of Americans do emigrate to Norway.
Interesting.
The statistics are that more Americans go to Norway and live there than Norwegians go to America and live there.
Yeah, but we're probably talking like 15 people either way here.
Yeah, it's not a lot.
But I mean, aren't those countries ranked first on the list anyway in terms of quality of life? It's always a Norway or an Iceland or something.
Yeah, but they average it out. I mean, you don't hear about too many Norwegian success stories, you know. Their general standard of living. So the average Norwegian lives better than the average American.
Mm.
That's because there are a lot of very poor people in America. Parts of America are shithole places.
Yep.
I wouldn't want to live in Detroit or Baltimore. Baltimore is horrible. There's gun and knife crime. It's a disgrace. It's a mess.
Yeah, it's a place where business used to be.
Detroit is hell. Chicago is not so great. So when you think about America, you think this shining place that everything works in.
Well, you just watch Shameless.
And if you go to...
that makes you want to move there.
You go to certain neighborhoods. Listen,
Chicago.
I mean, there are certain neighborhoods in South Africa that no one wants to live in. We would call them shithole neighborhoods.
Rosettenville.
Yes. If you gave me the biggest free house in Rosettenville, I wouldn't be in a hurry to move there. Sorry. Makes it a shithole neighborhood. So you could break this down. There's some. There might be two rooms in your house that are shithole rooms compared to the other room.
Really?
Yes, really. I mean, this is insane. What, all things are equal? Who puts this crap in your head? And you get upset by Donald Trump. Wah, Donald Trump called my... So Donald Trump's so important that him calling your country a shithole makes you upset? Really? You put that much weight in what Donald Trump says? Then why aren't you worshipping him? Why aren't you, like, voting for him? Why aren't you running to America and saying, Donald Trump, I would love to work as a maid in one of your hotels? Because you don't respect Donald Trump. So how come he upsets you with his words?
Hmm.
Mad.
Perspective.
And you see people, like, losing their shit on the internet this weekend. Going crazy about this guy. He's so important to them. Like, he's not that important to me. Unreal. Anyway, look, we got lots to cover, and we've been talking about this for like 15, 20 minutes. How was everybody's weekend? Anything fun happen?
Oh, I'm definitely, like, old now. I'm a hypochondriac.
Why? Oh, what happened?
Shame.
So on Friday, I went...
She shakes her head.
Shame.
She's shaking her head here. She's like, I can't believe this.
No, on Friday, I went to the ophthalmologist.
Excuse me? Who?
ophthalmologist.
What do they do?
Eyes.
Eye specialist.
Can't you just call them an optometrist?
There's a difference.
Optician?
There's a difference between...
Don't you remember Mab said that she spoke to her mom?
I told my mom that there was something wrong with my eyes, and then she yelled at me because she said I'm obviously not taking care of myself. So then I marched off to the ophthalmologist. Mm-hmm. Anyway, we did a thorough check, and there are a couple of things that are wrong with me, but it's not like anything serious. And then on Saturday night, I had the sharpest pain in the world in my right lower abdomen, and I was convinced that I'd have to wake up on Sunday and march off to the emergency room because I definitely have appendicitis.
Yeah.
Woke up on Sunday and I was perfectly fine. And I was so angry with myself because I thought, when did you become this crazy person to think that you are immediately going to die every time something goes wrong with you?
But I'm like that as well. It's not just you. You and I are both, I think if we...
No, but this is the first time.
If we lived together, we'd have to have a live-in doctor.
Oh.
No, we would need a live-in doctor.
Just as a standard feature.
I felt like an 80-year-old woman just panicking that, oh my God, you're going to die at the drop of anything, feeling just a little bit sore.
I get a little bit of a pain. I go, oh, it's cancer. It's definitely cancer. I'm going. I better make my will.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah.
So the pain was bad.
No, it was bad pain, but on Sunday morning I woke up and it wasn't there anymore. So I thought, oh, well, I guess it wasn't that. So I'm fine.
I think I'm also a hypochondriac like you. Anything goes wrong, I immediately assume the worst.
Okay, I won't put my
feelings
on
you. But your eyes are good, you're okay, you're no glaucoma, there's no...
No checkup with the doctor today.
No, my eyes are fine.
Oh, but here is the difference, Sia asked, between an ophthalmologist, an optometrist, and an optician.
Oof.
It's complicated, because there are three different kinds. So an ophthalmologist is a medical or osteopathic doctor who specializes in eye and vision care.
Okay.
Right, so ophthalmologists differ from optometrists and opticians in their levels of training and in what they can diagnose and treat.
So in the hierarchy, who's top?
Well, as a medical doctor who's completed college and at least 8 years of additional medical training, an ophthalmologist is licensed to practice medicine and surgery. They diagnose and treat all eye diseases. They perform eye surgery and prescribe and fit eyeglasses and contact lenses.
So
they're the top
that's
tier.
Who to marry.
Think they're the... Yeah. Then you get an optometrist. They provide primary vision care, ranging from sight testing and correction to diagnosis, treatment, and management of vision changes. But they're not going to operate in your eye.
Mm-mm, I'm not impressed by them anymore.
And an optician is a technician who's trained to design, verify, and fit eyeglass lenses and frames, contact lenses. So they're not doctors. They are technicians who make the stuff that helps us to
they
see.
They do
better.
The eye test. Right. They fit you for glasses.
Right.
Okay. Ophthalmologist.
That's the one. If you're going to marry any of the three...
Yeah, I need to search that on LinkedIn.
Right.
Find them around me.
So I was talking to a friend of mine over the weekend. He uses LinkedIn for dating. Like, we use Tinder.
LinkedIn.
I've heard that.
He says you get a certain caliber of person.
Yes.
You know, you could check on their credentials. You make sure that they're very professional.
Uh-huh.
And he says this is where he picks up a lot of girls. And he particularly, this guy in question, he loves him... professional Indian women. That's his niche market.
That's where you find
Yeah.
him.
He says he never goes wrong on LinkedIn. Everywhere else he gets disappointed.
Yeah, a friend of mine once said to me, if you want to avoid girls who won't suck you dry, LinkedIn is the way to go. Because then you know for sure that these are women who make their own money.
Yeah.
And they're not going to leech off of you.
He says there's a level of respect he gives to women on LinkedIn that he wouldn't to like hoes on Tinder.
Yeah. To whom it may concern,
yeah.
I am writing this email because I find you attractive.
Yes. No. Let us correspond about some possible synergies between our two overlapping areas of business.
Bring this relationship to a termination as I'm looking to pursue other interests in the social place.
Yes. Ooh, how romantic.
But one of my sisters, who's the big academic at home, she's studied and she's in finance. She was once on a dating site for professional people. So you filter your search results based on what a person has studied, how many years experience they have at work, etc., etc. So she tried that out for a while.
Well, there are a couple of sites, mostly in America, but you've got like a site where only Jewish people can meet Jewish people. You get a site where black people can meet black people.
J-Date.
Yeah.
Jada, you get the one where black people meet black people, and you get the one where, like, you only have lesbians and you only have gay guys and, you know, so on. So you find all the different kinds.
Welcome to the 21st century.
So if you want to narrow it down, but this guy, he tells me on Saturday night, no, this is what he's doing. He goes on to LinkedIn. So that's where the fish are biting.
You also get websites for the wealthy, because, you know, wealthy people don't like being with the poor.
That's right.
Question, how do you get on them dry?
They really don't, yeah.
How do you get on there then? Do you have to give a 3-month bank statement?
To prove that you are wealthy. I don't know how, Sia, but not just anybody gets in there.
Best belief.
I don't know how, because I'm poor.
Whatever happens to that lesser site as well?
But do they separate the kinds of wealthy? Because, you know, none of us, we might be able to get in like tier 1, but tier 20 where the Saudi sheiks and those kind of people hang, you know. Yeah. I don't know that we'd get into that part.
I want generational wealth, like to find a Johnson & Johnson heir, you know.
Always after the Johnson, huh?
Do you know? Who was I talking to about Johnson & Johnson? Hang on a second. Because that's a very bad example, actually, Sia.
Oh, why? Sorry, I thought, like, you know a Johnson.
Because Johnson & Johnson, the guy who founded that business, he didn't give his kids anything. He made them work. He said, you go out, go. He didn't even give them a job in his company. He said, go out and work in a spaza shop, basically. Sell stuff.
No.
We'll see how you do, and I'm not giving you anything.
Okay, never mind.
So Johnson & Johnson,
not interested in that. No, thank you.
Stay away from that one.
We'll find someone else.
I mean, out of all the companies, you chose that one. And someone was talking to me about this just the other day.
We'll find a Rockefeller.
Who was it who told me this? It's driving me crazy. I had this very conversation.
It'll come to you.
Anyway. All right, so we'll get into some headlines. We'll check in what the things are that you need to know this morning. The next little bit between Mubs and I, we're going to take you through some headlines. Ben's got some sport. We'll check in at Said by Sia, which is your daily dose of kind of upbeat, positive, useful, inspirational information. And there's sometimes a story in there and sometimes some words of wisdom from someone else. But one thing it isn't is a picture with a sunset and some inspirational quote slapped on top of that.
Carl tweet over the weekend, by the way?
Carl's tweeting. Carl, my dog has now got social media.
If you're not following Carl, you're not living, basically. Yeah,
he's everywhere. Everywhere.
He literally tweets some inspirational shit, literally.
And then we got to talk about the EFF and their campaign against H&M, which launched in a flurry of activity over the weekend. And I'd like to hear your thoughts on that too, because there's lots of people with lots to say about that. So, if you want to join in, you know what to do. You can WhatsApp us on 0797-482090. If you would like to call us, 0861-555-189. And if you'd like to tweet us, you could do that at cliffcentral.com. Just before we get into the five things you need to know, some messages. Happy Monday morning, team. I hope you're well and rested. Actually, not listening live, but I know this is a good time. Just went into Bitfinex, and they've switched up the rules of the exchange. They now want a minimum account equity of $10,000. I'm not exactly walking around with over 100,000 rand to place in crypto. Any advice on this matter? Dumi from Joburg. Dumi, I heard Run sent me a screenshot to say that they'd opened up. I haven't gone on to try and register, but that seems like it's going to exclude a lot of people. So I don't know. I would imagine that there are going to be smaller exchanges that will open up. Otherwise, you can find places that trade in the major cryptos. You know, you can get a couple of them on certain wallets. But I don't know exactly how we're going to get through that. And he says, also a big shout out to what you're doing. This isn't negative feedback, which I know you're craving, but you are creating a mindset of success out there for all your listeners, which is something to be proud of. Terrestrial radio is so in the dark ages. Yeah, thank you. I was on holiday, says Carl in Jersey, in Port Edward over December, and I was telling a friend that it is a shithole. Port Edward is. I love it there, but the town itself is a shithole. When this Trump thing happened, I suddenly thought I was guilty, but objectively, demonstrably, it is a shithole. The hype is unnecessary. Carl, Josie. And Ashley says, Gareth, no countries No, just as countries aren't all equal, people aren't all equal. The president of America being a douche is more significant than a douche hobo. Yeah, but that depends on whether or not you respect the president of the United States. If you decided in 2016, when he won the election, that he was a douchebag, as many people did, and if you decided before that, based on what he'd said, you know, things like grab her by the pussy, if you decided at that stage you don't really respect this man, then you can't let his words upset you because you've already decided you don't respect him. You know, if your dad comes home drunk every night and swears and, like, knocks over furniture, he's still your dad, but that doesn't mean you respect him. You stop listening to him eventually. You're like, oh, that old drunk. So this is the same with Trump. If you don't respect him, you don't take him seriously. And I know he's president of the United States, but a lot of people who've been crying the most on social media about what he says are the people who keep telling me they don't respect him. So you've got to make up your mind. Either you don't respect him, in which case, who cares what he says, or you take him terribly seriously, in which case, you have to take him terribly seriously. And that means you can't go around saying he's an idiot and he doesn't know what he's talking about. Make up your mind. It starts with you, is what I'm saying. Anyway, let's get into some news. There are a couple of stories to pay attention to this morning. Mavs, where do you want to start?
Well, the Democratic Alliance have decided that a disciplinary process will be what decides the mayor's fate, Patricia de Lille. The DA's legal commission is expected to conclude the process within the next 60 days. Why must things take so long?
Yeah, I mean, Cape Town's in a crisis. They're going to run out of water.
In the meantime, she has been asked to relinquish her leadership of the city's water crisis, Gareth, to the deputy mayor, Ian Nielsen. So they really don't want her being stressed out at all over the next 60-day
period. Government in Cape Town.
I think there's a witch hunt in Patricia de Lille. I'm on her side. I told you the other day, just based on what I know about her and hearing her own, because she's finally, last week, she came out and said she's going to speak out. Tell her side of the story. Sounds like there's a witch hunt in the DA.
Well, that's what she's saying, but the DA leader, Musi Maimane, says the evidence presented warrants further action against her. So they're about to put her through the ringer.
Oh, well, I don't know who to believe, but I do like Patricia de Lille. I just, for some reason, I think she's just an honest person.
Mm.
I don't know. That's what I read out of her. Warner Brothers have approved a Harry Potter movie, which is called The Rise of Voldemort, and they're going to release that. How do you like that? I mean, if you're a Harry Potter fan and you were worried.
Yeah,
oh,
sorry, yeah. I just don't know where to go with that. Is Voldemort the kind of creepy Peter-looking guy?
He's the one without a nose.
Oh,
Voldemort's
that's
the
nice.
Evil dude. He's the bad guy, the one we do not speak of. They never mention his name, and then Harry has to fight him. And he's the embodiment of evil in the movies. Anyway, it's a fan film, and Warner Brothers have approved it as part of the franchise, and it's being released. Hmm. Origins of the Air, that's Voldemort, the movie, which is coming out. So if you want to see that, there's some excitement around that. And, you know, there are a lot of people who love Harry Potter, and it's probably, what, the second, third biggest franchise in history after, what, Star Wars and Lord of the Rings? Some amazing stories being told in movies, which weren't... It wasn't possible to tell these stories in movies before, because with all the special effects, and you couldn't make these in the 1960s and 70s.
So well, you did. They just went straight to ETV.
Yeah, they were crap. I mean, isn't that... That's one of the reasons it's great to be alive now. You can see your stories told in color and with special effects, and it's believable. You can see Harry Potter wielding his wand. You can see lightsaber duels with Luke Skywalker. And you could see the orcs amassing an army and marching on Middle Earth. I mean, you couldn't see that in movies before. It's great. Now's a great time to be alive, I keep telling people.
Africa analyst, journalist, and former MTN corporate manager Chris Don't Touch Me on My Studio, Maroleng.
Yes.
There are a bunch of reports that have been coming in that he is set to take over as the new COO of the SABC. In other words, the new Claudio Motsoeneng.
I'm so happy for him because Chris has been in here a couple of times. He's an honest dude. He seems to really care about broadcasting. He's got a good record. I think we should give this guy the benefit of the doubt and help him. He's going to need a lot of help. You try and steer that ship.
Ooh, what a headache.
So I'll tell you what, I'm holding back on criticizing the SABC. I'm going to leave them alone. I might even pay my TV license.
Oh,
wow, that okay, is that a is, major that is, commitment.
I might even do that just because Chris needs all the help he can get, and we've got to support him. You know, if you're going to fix that place, you've got to start off by appointing the right people. He's the right person for that job. I hope that he gets support from the board. I hope the board know what they're doing. There's a lot that has to be sorted out. But good for Chris Merling. I'm happy about this. Let's give him a round of applause.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. All right. I mean, let's
just
Alala, Chris Merling.
For getting the job, and now he's got a lot of work to do. So if you can help him in some way, please do. He's a good man, this.
Now, the spokesperson for the SABC, Kaiser Khanyago, would neither confirm nor deny information because it was first spread in tweets congratulating Maruleng that indicated that he is set to take the top position, but the spokesperson said the appointment has not been finalized, and once it is finalized, we will announce it. So I guess we have to wait for the SABC to announce. But it would seem that...
It seems like it's out there.
Chris,
I mean, we don't... Nobody waits for the SABC to make something true.
Well, no, I mean, Twitter kind of beats everyone to everything.
One of the reasons the SABC
days.
Has
so,
to...
Yeah, also...
Got a lot of things to do.
You touched me!
You remember that? That was great.
You touched me!
Don't touch me in my studio!
Mr.
who? Mr. Fasachi!
Yes, Mr. Fasachi!
That's a fraud. That was
great. Fasachi, you leave that woman
that was
alone.
Great. Right.
Oh, good times. You touched me.
But I mean, what a guy to be running the SABC, a guy who has such respect for the studio. You know? That's what you want,
yes,
right?
Gemoedere loop hoog oor rasse debatte. Dit kom na die moord op die AWW leier Eugene Terblanche.
Mr. Fasachi. Mr. Fasachi, I'm going to try and find that. Hang on. Here it is. Yeah, don't touch me on my studio. Come on, where is this clip? God damn it. He's from the Avia Beer, wasn't he?
Who, Mr. Fasachi?
Yeah. He was, right? Mr. Andre Fasachi.
Oh, what a classic clip.
Let me just see if I can find Andre Fasachi and Chris Merling. I'm sure someone would have put that on the internet, right?
Oh, yeah.
Definitely.
It's just don't touch me on my studio.
Let's see. Here it is. Oh, here it is.
Oh, did you?
Okay, yeah, I got it.
It is still you versus us.
But can't you understand that we have out of perspective? It's a real fact.
Do you care about the starving millions of African people in this country?
I care
more. Do you care
more
about the farm workers who are being oppressed in this country? Do you care
about the fact? Don't interrupt me. I've finished. Thank you. Bye. Bye.
Okay.
And you won't dare.
You won't dare
interrupting me.
Go ahead, this man.
Thank you very much. Touch me, and you'll be in trouble. Touch me on my studio.
You touched me.
Touch me on my studio. Touch me on my studio.
You touched me.
And
take away his arm.
Touch me on my studio.
Take away his arm from me.
Touch me on my studio. Touch me on my studio.
I touch you on your studio.
Touch me on my studio.
I touch you on your studio.
You don't do that.
Oh, that's so great. All right. So well done, Chris Merling.
You don't dare touch me.
That was such a great time.
You are interrupting me.
And don't you dare.
Interrupting me.
Interrupting me.
I wonder what he's...
Oh, man.
I bet you he's not in the running for any big jobs anywhere.
Oh, he's moved to Orania, didn't she?
Has he?
Okay,
let's move on.
Okay, all right. So you did mention this earlier, Gareth, and in case people missed it, yes. EFF members decided that they were going to protest H&M stores in various shopping centers across the country over the weekend. And those protests very quickly turned into vandalism, where a lot of the H&M stores were thrashed. This is in response to the retailer being accused of racism after a black model boy who wore a sweatshirt in an advert with the slogan "Coolest Monkey in the Jungle." Now, the DA have said that the EFF must be held accountable for the vandalism, and in fact that Julius Malema must pay for the damages, But unfortunately for the DA, Julius Malema simply doesn't care. In fact, he has gone on to say that the party is not apologetic about their supporters' conduct, and that the point was for the retailer to be taught a lesson. Malema further stated that more is to come.
Hmm.
Not exactly sure what he means by that, but yeah, unapologetic, and that people like H&M stores must be taught a lesson, essentially.
All right. Well, we'll get into some of that at 7. Also, just a quick bit of useful information from the Middle East, because we're always talking about these countries. In Qatar, a Qatari royal says he's being held against his will in the United Arab Emirates. Yeah, there's something going on. The rest of the Arab nations do not like Qatar.
Yeah, it's a strange story, this.
They've turned on Qatar in a big way. Now they're keeping this one Qatari royal, like, under arrest in the UAE. No one can figure out really what's going on. They've just decided suddenly those are the bad guys. You know? I'm not sure what the plan is there, but it's just a bit of news coming through right now from the Middle East. All right, we've got to get into Ben's sport, and then Anthea will pop in with a little bit more. We've also got a movie premiere that's happening. I'll tell you about that. And plenty more. It's all coming up on the way. Ben, first, over to you. Let's see what you got.
Well, guys, so many big stories in the weekend, but let's start with football, because Man City's 22-game unbeaten run has been ended. Liverpool beat them last night 4-3. What an exciting football match that was. For all of you who love football, or even if you don't, that was quite something. Liverpool, well, we know going forward they are incredibly exciting and dangerous. And even without Coutinho, who went for a record transfer fee, which I don't think anyone thinks he was worth. Yeah, they're just such a great team. They really are. And I think it was always going to end, this unbeaten run. And the fact that, you know, Man City was still adamant in playing an attacking game versus Liverpool, well, you got to give them credit for that. And many people are saying that there's a reason why Jose Mourinho was always so defensive against Liverpool. Well, last night's match kind of proved this. 4-3. Arsenal, well, they lost to Bournemouth 2-1. So Arsenal fans are now becoming, well, in the beginning it was a bit of a laugh, and it was always a joke around the fact that they could beat anybody and also lose to anybody in the same day. But now they're just losing. And there was this beautiful image of this guy, this Arsenal fan in the Bournemouth stands, just mouthing, "You're rubbish. You're all rubbish. You're rubbish." And he did it for like 30 seconds. Just finished. The man was just beside himself with anger. Chelsea were held by Leicester, so they didn't get anywhere on the log. They could have got to second, but they didn't. And Man United will play Stoke tonight. It's 8 o'clock. In more pressing football news, Saudi Arabia have let women watch football. This is a big thing. So up until last weekend, you couldn't be a woman inside a football stadium in Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, they were tweeting out pictures and showing like women and really enjoying the football.
Well, here's the catch. They were invited to greet guests. They're actually just working, basically. They had to wear high, like,
oh, they weren't
Luma orange bibs. And
I saw some women sitting there and spectating.
Yeah, but they had to do some work.
Oh, okay.
It's no free run here for the women just yet.
All right.
But it's quite exciting because there was two matches of the weekend, and there'll be another one on Tuesday. So all these chances for women to watch the football, and they really like it because they also like playing it. And you know what? This is a strange thing, Saudi Arabia. Women are actually quite similar to men. They like things. They want to do things in public, and they don't want to be escorted around by men who hate them. Who would have thought? In the Absa Premiership over the weekend, well, Sundowns are still on top, but big wins for Kaizer Chiefs and Orlando Pirates. Really, really good results there for them. Pirates in particular, they beat Sundowns away at Sundowns 3-1, so huge result for them. Kaizer Chiefs beat Polokwane City 1-0, and Bidvest Wits, well, they try to make it 2 in a row, but they drew the chipper. Sad times.
That's terrible.
Bottom of the log there, stay. And I got to say, SuperSport United, coach Eric Tinkler, they're not doing so flash either. Golden Arrows beaten them 1-0 over the weekend, so interesting to see how that team plays out, because I don't know. Looks like a lot of tension in the mix there. They're just not winning. They're not doing what Tinkler was hoping for. And man, is that guy. He shouts his players all day, every day. He just looks angry.
Oh.
He looks like someone who's just been kicked in the nuts. And he's just angry the whole time.
Terrible.
In cricket news, well, the Proteas won the toss and chose to bat on a pitch that, well, I don't know. People have been complaining about the pitch all weekend. It's meant to be hard, fast, seeming, and quite unfriendly to Indian players. But Ravi Chandran Ashwin bowled 31 overs on day one. On day one, Keshav Maharaj opened the bowling for the... It's just, why is this ball turning so much at Centurion? So people are very upset about this, but it looks like it'll be quite a good match, despite the criticism. I'm not going to stand here and tell you about people bitching. We all know what's happening actually on the field. Protea has got 335, India 183 for 5. But the thing is, Kohli is there. Kohli's not on 50, so 85. He's there with Hardik Pandya. So day 3 is going to be very interesting. The Proteas
guy's name
somehow,
is Hardik Pandya?
Yeah.
Jesus.
If the Proteas can somehow scrounge, let's just say, a 100-run lead, that'd be a huge plus. 80, whatever the lead is here, right, they can just get their head down and get a decent second innings under the belt. Batting last of this pitch is going to be very difficult. The fact it's breaking out, the fact it's so receptive to turn already, and has been from day one. Still, Proteas are still slightly ahead here. But the fact that Kohli has now decided to bat, that is really, really good news for the Indians. So this all starts 10 a.m. South African time. There was an ODI match, but I mean, who really cares about one-day cricket right now? I know the World Cups are a big deal, but after the Ashes, nobody wants to see Australia and England play. I don't think Australia are that keen. They got absolutely hammered by England yesterday by 5 wickets. Jason Roy got 180. So I don't know if that, that just means to me that the bowlers don't care anymore. In golfing news, it was a really big weekend of golf, starting with the Eurasia Cup. The Europeans were trailing the Asians through the first 2 days, but in the singles, they won 12 matches in the end there. So they really came roaring back. And it's a big win because you consider the European side, this is where they get to test their sort of depth. There's no John Rahm, there's no Sergio Garcia, there's no Justin Rose, there's no Rory McIlroy. So they have a chance to kind of test some guys who could be, you know, on the fringes of the big Ryder Cup team. In other golfing news, Chris Paisley won the SA Open. Him and his wife went around in 4 days and had a pretty good time, winning that by 3 strokes in the end. Bloody good result that, seeing as Brandon Grace was right behind, and he was actually leading at one stage after 2 holes. He started birdie eagle, but Paisley, well, he kept his nerve. So it's now the 3rd Englishman in 4 years that's won the SA Open. In the PGA Tour, Peyton Keziah, he just won a 6-hole playoff, beating John Hahn in the Sony Open Hawaii. And in tennis, huge surprises in tennis so far at the Aussie Open. Sloane Stephens is out, Venus Williams is out, Coco Vandeweghe is out. Basically all, I think, 7 American women played in the first round, and they all lost. Horrible results there. But also Kevin Anderson, he's gone. He was obviously South Africa's big hope. He made the finals of the US Open. Well, Carl Edmund couldn't give a toss about any of that. He beat Anderson in the first round in 5 sets. Done. Finished. And that's all we've got time for, unfortunately, this morning.
All right. Well, we've got lots of other things to get to. And remember, you get to catch up with Ben once a week if you're a solid sports fan on a Thursday on the Bounce Show, where he gets into some amazing stuff that has a lot more detail and time awarded to it.
And interesting guests, last week in particular.
That's right. And every morning here, a little sports update too. Don't expect him to cover bullshit sport though. He's not interested in elephant polo and, you know, slalom, snow skiing. And
well, Winter Olympics is coming up, and I love the Winter Olympics.
All right. First, let's turn our attention now to Anthea, who's got the latest for us in your money, our money. If you have any money, this is where you learn about it.
She looks hard for the money.
Yes, she does.
So hard for it, honey. She works hard for the money, so you better treat her right.
Good morning, Anthea.
Good morning, Gareth.
What's
we're
happening?
Too much there. Apologies.
Very exciting. Pretty messy week last week, I'm afraid. Luckily for us, we did close slightly positive on the week, but we'll go through that in a minute. In fact, global markets are hitting all-time highs. The Dow Jones is now 25,000. Well, it was 25,000. It did have a bit of a retracement.
Greatest levels the stock market's ever been at. The greatest, most tremendous levels.
That's exactly
winning.
Right.
I can't stop the winning.
I want to talk about that, actually, because one of the things that we are very conscious of as asset managers is that the the economy and the stock market is cyclical, and so invariably you're bound to have a retracement at some stage, right? So we don't know how deep it is, we don't know when it is, and so we just follow it. And so people, I must admit, people like me are getting a little bit nervous at the moment. We're sitting there going, we're probably due a little bit of a retracement at some stage.
You remind me of those old people who say...
Thanks.
No, you know those old people say... Every time you something good happens to you, there's something bad waiting around the corner. It can't always be good.
Well,
those prophets of doom, you know, those people who say, oh, your life is just too good. There's something horrible is going to happen soon.
There's like wisdom in that, no?
No.
No? Okay, just negativity. No, but listen, historically we know this happens. And in fact, if you take a look at the stock market charts, you'll see that the time to a retracement shortens. So, you know, every time there's a depression or a recession, the period between recessions actually gets shorter. But I actually don't want to talk about that too much. What I want to talk about is based on historic price earnings multiples, and this is where the reality of the fundamentals comes in. Because can you imagine a company that is making X amount in earnings and the share price goes up and up and up? That company can only produce so much in earnings before it hits a plateau, right? So it's not about historic and, oh, if it's always good, then there's something bad coming. It's about realistically what can they extract out of their product or their consumer base or their market share or whatever it is we look at that gives them these earnings. And the problem is, like, in 1998-99, remember the dot-com?
Mm-hmm.
Era, is that everyone was going, this time is different, because there was an explosion in tech and everyone was saying, well, this is not like your old style industrial companies or your car companies or your trains or whatever it was we were analyzing before. You know, it's the dot-com era. The world is going to change forever. And then what happened? The dot-bomb era.
Yeah.
So that's all I'm saying. I'm saying just kind of we're a bit nervous. I think there is still value in a lot of companies, and this is what we do. We look at companies individually rather than just this kind of macro cyclical look. The JSE hit 60,000 this week, closed above 60,000, just for the record, which it did hit 61 in November and then came back a little bit. So it's also fairly high. But I must admit, I think there's still a lot of value on the JSE. There are still a lot of shares trading at price earnings multiples, which really could be a lot higher than they are. Okay. I want to talk about that a bit because I want to talk about my stock picks for the year. But before I get there, I want to finish off last week. I mean, jeez, there was so much last week. And a couple of the big things. In one day, on Tuesday, Aspen was down 10%.
Sure. How does that happen? 10%?
Yeah. The next day, Resilient, Nephi Rockcastle, and kind of all the other property shares were down 11, 12, it was a horrible week. And the reason for it is because there is speculation in the market that there is something called the Viceroy Report being released. Now, if you'll remember, on the same day that Marcus Eustace resigned, I think it was the 5th of December last year,
mm-hmm.
Viceroy, which actually is a media house, acting as a research house, I think, released a report saying that Steinhoff was a house of cards. And everyone's putting together the fact that Viceroy has suddenly come up to the party. I mean, they really have like 2,000 Twitter followers or something. They're a media house playing in the investment space, shall we say. And the and then they tweeted about 2 weeks ago, a week and a half ago, they tweeted that they are looking to release another report on either a U.S., European, or South African company. I mean, that's, you know, if you say a U.S., lots of companies there, European, and lots of countries there, and South Africa, very specific. And one of the companies we know they're looking at is a U.S.-based pharmaceuticals company. And so everyone put two and two together and got five and started selling Aspen down. And the criteria really for this report, they're saying, if the company has high debt levels, if it is very acquisitive, made lots of acquisitions, lots of debt, then things are going to fall in a heap, basically. Stephen Sard, who's the CEO of Aspen, came out and said, don't panic, here are my results, they're all fine, we're safe as houses. What's his name from Property Resilient? Des De Beer. he came out and he was very smart about it. He actually didn't say, oh, you know, this report is nonsense, we're safe. He just said, here's a trading update, have a look at my financials and you decide, which was very clever. Didn't really help, though. The share still closed 12% down on the week. Mm. Mm-hmm. So this viceroy is hanging over everybody's head. Everyone's worried about it. Can I just say, this is not new to the stock market. Viceroy, a media house purporting to be a research house, they cannot short shares. And you remember what shorting shares is, right? Mm-hmm. Selling a share that you don't own. So normally you would buy a share, and when it rises, you want to take profit, you sell the share. If you don't own it, you can actually go short it. In other words, borrow it from somebody who does own it, pay them a small fee, and hope the share goes down. When the share does go down, you buy back your shares and give it to the guy you borrowed it from. There is a small intricacy in all of that, is that the guy you borrowed it from can at any stage recall the share. And so if you're short the share and he suddenly goes, sorry, I want my shares back, no matter where the share is trading, you have to buy them back and give them to him. So there's a guy in the U.S., activist investor called Bill Ackman. I think we might have spoken about him before.
Yeah, you've told me he goes to all the shareholders' meetings.
That's right. And I think I might have said about him, the only thing bigger than his hedge fund is his ego.
Right.
Anyway, and he shorted a company called Herbalife. You know Herbalife,
know,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
He called them a Ponzi scheme, basically. He put $1 billion bet that this share would go down. He subsequently, as of November last year, had to close the position because guess what? The share went 50% higher. Yeah. So he's lost 50% of his $1 billion. Okay, so the thing in South Africa and why everyone's reacting like this is because our market is just too small to have activist shareholders, and so this is new, and now everyone overreacts. And it is a dangerous game because these shares can go to zero, and especially if you're leveraged, you can lose more than the bet you placed. So in the case of Bill Ackman, he was probably short and leveraged.
Oh.
No, right?
So he could not good.
He could lose multiples of $1 billion.
Right.
And then the other thing that was very pertinent in our market, because we just can't get enough of, is Steinhoff. We're still talking about it.
Well, of course, it's probably the biggest crisis from a JSE-listed company in a long time.
I think maybe ever.
Quite possibly.
J.P. Morgan put out their results, the good and great American J.P. Morgan, big bank, right?
Mm-hmm.
Released results last week, said that they had crystallized a 1.7 billion rand loss related to one levered derivatives position. Word on the street,
it was
a single stock future in Steinhoff.
In other words, for those people who feel they were hoodwinked, so was the great J.P. Morgan.
Absolutely.
So nobody knew anything except the people inside of Steinhoff, and they'll go to jail for it.
We can only hope so.
Hmm.
I mean, Steinhoff is now a 6 rand 22 share at the beginning of December. It was a 45 rand share, and a year ago it was over 100 rand. Just depressing, quite frankly.
All right.
Yeah, so that's pretty much shares. Can we talk about kind of the three top picks? I want to talk a little bit about companies and where I think the value is on the JSE, because I always deliver such negative news.
Yeah, give us three companies that you think we should watch this year.
Okay. The first one, Anglo American, it's a little bit of a difficult one to buy because global commodities have had such a good run last year. And you know we were invested anyway, but I think it's still worth it because it's still trading fairly cheaply at a 6x price earnings multiple. I think historically it's probably closer to high teens, low 20s. So at 6, it's pretty cheap.
Mm-hmm.
They have done exceptionally well to delever their balance sheet. So in June of last year, they said they were targeting a 6 billion euro net debt, because you know they now report overseas, so mm-hmm. they report in euros, for December. But actually by June, they had already reached that 6 billion euros. I mean, granted, it is because of lower CapEx spend, so in other words, capital expenditure. So they're not expanding, which is not great for us. But the fact that they've delevered their balance sheet and that they're saying they will pay out 40% of earnings means that they, because of this delevered balance sheet, they are now able to do that. There's a lot of speculation that there might be a special dividend coming. I don't think so. Not until at least the end of the year. But they are now paying dividends, and we do like cash in hand. The other company I do like very much at the moment is Richemont. I say very much. I just like it, actually, because it's another company that's been kind of traded into the doldrums, you know, from 170 or 80 last year, I think it was, all the way down to 80 and now back up to 115. I think it could easily get back up to over 150. And the reason I think so is because the global luxury goods market is suddenly picking up again. What they had before at the end of 2016 was that Richemont had to buy back watches that were stuck in this pipeline from Asian wholesalers because they couldn't get rid of it. So they weren't selling, and the wholesalers were sitting on all the stock. And so Richemont said, okay, well, don't worry, we'll buy it back from you. So they've done that. I think they've spent a lot of money doing that. Also a lot of money doing a bit of a share buyback. The watches pipeline has now normalized. Jan Rupert's back at the helm, which, whether you think that's a good thing or not, I'm not sure. But he surrounded himself with a fairly strong management team, and it seems to be working because they put out a trading update last week which showed that things were back to normal. And on top of that, they're implementing a nice internet business. So it just feels like things are coming together. You know, it's not it's not ridiculously cheap like Anglo is, but things are coming together.
All right. And one more?
And then probably my most controversial pick for the year is Comair, because oil, which is a big input into expenses in airline companies, is trading at a three-year high. But I do like it because, well, for so many reasons, really good management team. They're vertically integrated, so they're cost-saving. In fact, they bought the business that supplies the airline food for Kalula and British Airways. It's called Food Direction.
Yes.
And that will save them 37 million rand a year. I mean, they're doing the right thing, yeah, for sure, right? And so I just think from that point of view, like, it's looking really good. They do have slightly lower cash on hand. They're not a great dividend payer. But to counter this higher oil price, we now have a stronger rand, by the way, so that's not bad for them. And then also 20% of income is generated from, sorry, not income, earnings, is generated from non-airline brands because of this vertical integration. So they're not that dependent on putting bums on seats in aeroplanes, basically. And so that I like. And then, of course, don't forget, we've also got this impending lawsuit against SAA, which started out as an 800-odd million rand lawsuit. They were awarded 554 million rand plus costs, which added up to 1.16 billion rand. And SAA then went back and said, we're countering it. By the time it's all done, and I think it'll happen sometime this year, that amount of money that Comair will be awarded if the judgment goes in their favor is 1.9 billion rand. Quite frankly, don't you want to say to SAA, listen, guys, seriously, just pay the 554 plus costs and get away, get out of it. But no, they've just escalated and escalated. I think somebody once asked me if I thought SAA would be able to afford that amount of money, and that, of course, is the big question.
Well,
so there you go.
They just get government bailouts when they can't afford things.
Exactly, spot on. There you
Daddy
go.
Daddy comes and pays for everything like a spoilt rich kid.
Did you say taxpayer, Daddy taxpayer?
Yes, that's us.
Yep. Yeah. Very kind of you.
I know. Isn't it nice that we look
after? I'll be sitting on my Comair shares.
Yeah, I think that's a good call.
Waiting for the taxpayers.
All right. Thanks, Anthea.
My pleasure. Looking forward to all the excitement on World Economic Forum coming up. That's the big thing.
Okay. And then we'll check in with you next Monday.
Speak to you next
week. Unless something devastating or fantastic happens.
Indeed.
All right.
Thanks, we hope for fantastic.
Yeah. No, not devastating. All right. Anthea Gardner, everybody, with a quick look at the markets and some interesting stories and stock picks and what the hell's going on in the Viceroy report, which everybody in the know is talking about. Now you can be in the know as well, thanks to Anthea. It sounds like you know everything. Isn't that right? All right. When we come back in a little while, we're going to get into lots of stories. The two big ones, though, of the last week are, the last weekend, this weekend, were the H&M racism protests by the EFF, the vandalism, the looting, the craziness going on in stores, and then the question of Donald Trump calling certain countries in the world shitholes. I'd like to know what you think of that too. All you need to do is pick up your phone, 0861-555-189, or you can WhatsApp us, 0797-482090, or tweet whatever you like.
This is CliffCentral.com.